You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Kanan Schlesinger, Demi Hellenius, Jared Dansler, and Martin Dodge. The producer is Sam Bowman. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. And the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Sari Gametha.
And I'm Robert Barncord. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it'll be Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Ani and Lynn will host Positively Revolting Talk Radio with a look at the continuing war on women. At 9, One Land, Many Voices features a talk by independent Palestinian researcher and human rights activist Omar Barghouti speaking at the Peaceworks Justice Rising Conference at Evergreen College last year. At 10, it'll be Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And at 10:15, Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 a.m. tomorrow, we'll hear a pilot edition of Pacific Underground, a program giving voice to local Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. Thanks to all of you KBOO members for your generous support. If you'd like to become a member of KBOO, just go to kboo.fm and click on Donate today. Good night, Sarika.
Good night, Robert.
Here in the Northwest, we know about the Delta Five, the five Washington state activists who in September blocked a mile-long oil train, calling attention to the danger extraction industries have on the environment. They invoked the necessity defense, claiming their actions were justified and necessary due to the overwhelming threat of climate change. Across the continent, nine activists in New York State attempted the same defense for an action which took place in November to stop work on a natural gas pipeline set to run through their state. KBOO's Jared Dansler brings us more on this in-depth story.
My name is Jared Dansler with KBOO News. I'm here speaking with Courtney Williams, a member of Resist AIM. Courtney, who are the Montrose Nine? And please describe to us the action that took place in upstate New York.
Sure. The Montrose Nine are a group of residents, seniors, young people, even a pastor and a lawyer, who basically worked together blocking access to Spectra Energy's construction yard for their Algonquin pipeline expansion to halt construction on that pipeline back on November 9th. The nine were arrested, and they were charged with disorderly conduct. And last Friday, they went to trial in Cortland, New York, having pleaded not guilty to those charges. And they intend to use the necessity defense, saying that really there were no other legal options for them to protect themselves and their community from imminent harm.
Now, over here in Washington, we have the Delta Five who attempted to use the necessity defense. What is the plan moving forward to use the necessity defense in this specific case?
Sure. So in this specific case, we most definitely have exhausted all other legal options. Thanks to the archaic workings of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, we are right now in a legal holding pattern. We cannot proceed with any legal challenges to FERC's approval of this massive pipeline expansion until they rule on what's called a request for rehearing, which is basically a petition that a group of grassroots groups and municipalities filed asking FERC to reconsider their approval of this pipeline expansion given risks to public health and safety as well as violations of NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. Instead of ruling within 30 days, as FERC is supposed to, they have basically kept us in a holding pattern since April of 2015, refusing to rule on the request which, if they were to do so, would allow us to challenge their decision in court. So we really are completely unable, within the regulatory and legal framework, to take any steps to challenge this project. In addition, in terms of the risks that the Montrose 9 are facing, not only is there the real and imminent risk of global climate change from the massive amounts of fracked gas that this pipeline will carry, but there are a lot of health and safety risks in addition for the communities along its path. While fracking has been outlawed in New York State because of the impacts to public health, New York State has not outlawed other types of fracked gas infrastructure, such as this pipeline project. And we know that fracked gas infrastructure carries with it a lot of the same health impacts as fracking itself. So the communities along the route of this pipeline are going to be facing some of the exact same health risks that those living near fracking wells face. So there is that risk to health. In addition, this pipeline, the entirely new segment of this pipeline, will pass only 105 feet from critical infrastructure at Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant. Indian Point is an aging nuclear power plant only 35 miles north of New York City. If there were to be a worst-case scenario situation in terms of pipeline rupture, experts hired by the local municipalities have testified that we would be facing a risk to the plant, basically that in the event of an emergency, a pipeline rupture could prevent the plant from safely shutting down. The 50-mile evacuation radius for Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant includes the entirety of Manhattan and the five boroughs, parts of New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut. So while there is a very real risk from climate change, there is also a very real risk to this nuclear power plant and to the health of all the folks that live along this pipeline route. So the Montrose 9, when they stood up and said, we are in danger from imminent harm, they didn't only mean global climate change. They also meant the health impacts of fracked gas infrastructure and the risk that this could pose to Indian Point.
And the implications of this blast radius and this proximity to Indian Point, the nuclear site, I feel cannot be understated. And in a pledge of resistance put out by your campaign, you also note the proximity to Buchanan Verplank Elementary School and the 300 students therein.
Yes, and one of those 300 students is my six-year-old kindergartner. So this project, you know, is also posing a grave risk to those children, to my children. And while, you know, and that's what I try to get across to people is, yes, the risk to Indian Point can't be understated, and that jeopardizes the entire New York metropolitan region. But even if this pipeline works exactly as it is designed, nothing ever goes wrong. It works perfectly for the lifetime of the pipeline. We are still going to be facing pollution from this pipeline every single day. And my community is already an environmental justice community that is feeling the health effects of lots of industrial pollution and infrastructure pollution, and this pipeline will make that worse. So, you know, while it is catastrophic to think of what could happen with the nuclear power plant, even if this works completely according to plan, it's going to be spewing methane and the contaminants in that fracked gas into the air for these communities to breathe and jeopardizing their health.
Of course, we're seeing the effects of methane gas in the huge leak that's happening out in Porter Ranch in California and the residents complaining of respiratory and eye disorders out there. And to keep it in New England for the moment, so New York State has banned fracking in the state, but the Federal Energy and Regulatory Commission has allowed for this pipeline to run from Pennsylvania through New York State into Canada. How can that be?
Exactly. We're not entirely clear. This, if you look at Spectra Energy's marketing materials, they are admitting that they will be exporting this gas. They're hooking it up to LNG facilities and to pipelines that flow into Canada for export. Yet they claim that this gas is for use for power generation in New England. So it's not entirely clear why potential stockholders can find out Spectra's plans to export gas, but the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission seems to be unable to find those same marketing materials and consider that when they issue the Certificate of Public Necessity claiming that this pipeline is needed. And in terms of New York State, our governor completely is turning a blind eye to not only this gas infrastructure project, the AIM pipeline, but also to gas storage in Seneca Lake and storage of fracking wastewater and all kinds of other fracking accoutrements that go along. So while hydrofracking is banned in New York State, residents all across the state are facing health risks and safety risks from gas storage, transmission pipelines, and other projects.
I'm looking at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's fact sheet about natural gas. It's called, What Do I Need to Know? An Interstate Natural Gas Facility on My Land. Under the question, Are Pipelines Safe? They mention that the Department of Transportation is set to enforce strict safety standards and require safety checks of pipelines and hold the company, in this case it would be Spectra Energy, accountable for safety checks. How does the DOT play in?
So, well, we know that there are entirely way too few inspectors to inspect these pipelines. We also know there have been a few whistleblowers that were employed by Spectra on the AIM pipeline construction who have gone public with their claims that safety requirements were completely flaunted by Spectra in a rush to get these pipelines in the ground. So basically burying pipes before inspections were completed and the safety and the security of the welds could be verified, things like that. Spectra also likes to claim these pipelines are safe, but in May of 2015, they had a pipeline rupture under the Arkansas River. The Texas Eastern Pipeline ruptured under the Arkansas River, and Spectra didn't even know it had happened until an angry tugboat captain contacted the Coast Guard because his tugboat was damaged in the explosion, and the Coast Guard notified Spectra that their pipeline had ruptured. And that exact scenario with an auxiliary pipeline pressurized with gas under a river is exactly the scenario that will take place under the Hudson River adjacent to Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant. So these pipelines most definitely are not safe. They rupture and leak on a pretty regular basis. We also know from data collected by the Pipeline Health and Safety PHMSA, we also know from looking at PHMSA data that pipelines built since the 2010s are failing at three times the rate of pipelines built in the 1950s and 1960s. The existing Algonquin pipeline, the two pipelines that are part of the Algonquin system, were put in the 1950s and 60s. They are three times safer than we can expect this new pipeline to be should Spectra put it in the ground.
What came then of the environmental impact statement?
Sure. So the way it works is FERC usually puts out a draft environmental impact statement and allows the public to comment on it and then revises it and issues a final statement. We found numerous mistakes and underestimations of impacts in even the final draft environmental impact statement. There were lots of details that were left out such that the impacts couldn't be measured. A lot of those impacts are self-reported by Spectra and not independently verified in any way. The other major issue here is that the AIM expansion is the first of three planned expansions that Spectra is going to complete on the Algonquin pipeline system. And they even name AIM Algonquin Incremental Market Expansion. They are doing this in increments. So there's AIM, which is the first. They want to pick up immediately thereafter, both in time and location, with Atlantic Bridge. And following Atlantic Bridge, their third project is Access Northeast. This is a very clear case of what's called segmentation, which is an illegal method wherein companies break a massive project into smaller pieces so that the overall environmental impact can't be measured or can't be taken into account. FERC has been found in federal court to have permitted other projects to be illegally segmented, and we believe they're doing it here again. But until they rule in our request for rehearing, we can't take them to court to challenge this decision.
Can you tell us about the steps moving forward and the upcoming court date by the Montrose Nine?
Sure. So the Montrose Nine will be back in court on February 3rd, where they will present their defense. We have experts in nuclear safety. We have experts in public health. We have a local councilman. They will testify not only to the safety risks, the health risks, and also all of the steps that have been taken by local municipalities to prevent this project. And this will show we have no other legal recourse than to take direct action. We are facing an imminent threat to both health and safety, and this forms the crux of the necessity defense that the Montrose Nine are mounting.
I've been speaking with Courtney Williams, media member of Resist AIM, that's Resisting the Algonquin Pipeline Expansion, proposed for New York State. We will follow this story closely. Thank you so much, Courtney, for speaking with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
For KBOO News, I'm Jared Dantzler.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6 p.m. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
The KBOO Foundation is seeking to fill two vacancies on the Board of Directors. The Board will elect the new directors at the February board meeting. Are you